Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. After a year of debate over when the Fed would start to cut rates and by how much, the Fed finally started last week with a cut of 50 basis points. Now, the markets did like the outcome, but that wasn't the only relevant market news from last week. So joining me this morning to kick off the week and for the CIO strategy snapshot, glad to welcome back Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jason Dreho. Jason, thank you for once again joining our listeners, our clients on a Monday morning.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Happy first week of fall. Hope it's all good.
Thank you, Jason. So recalling last week, you and I, as well as our colleague Brian Rose, we spoke about last Wednesday how the Fed delivered, in a bold way, a cut of 50 basis points. So to get started, can you speak a bit to your overall interpretation of that outcome and what do you expect from the Fed going forward?
The outcome in some way was a slight upside surprise. Going into the meeting, the market pricing had risen to about a 65% probability of a 50 basis point hike, but that was primarily driven by a media report suggesting that it was still very much on the table whether they would do 50 or 25, versus Fed guidance prior to their blackout period would indicate that it was a 25% hike was by far the most likely outcome. So I'd say the outcome was a modest upside surprise. Thinking about sort of what the Fed did overall, in simple terms, I'd say the Fed put was activated. By this, the Fed put, I mean, its willingness to act aggressively on any signs of sort of economic weakness. And by doing so, it implicitly supports risk assets and equity markets. I'd say the put was activated, and it was activated kind of at the money instead of option language, meaning we didn't need to see a lot of economic pain for them to kind of, make these cuts. During the press conference, Powell was very explicit, saying that they didn't think they were sort of behind the curve and their actions to cut 50 basis points was an indication that they don't intend to fall behind the curve, which means like they'll do what is necessary to cut to support the economy, which again, that's something that the markets ultimately, like quite a bit. There were some comments and, interpretations that this was a hawkish 50 basis point hike because their guidance towards cuts for the rest of this year, but also in particular for 2025, are below kind of what the market is currently pricing. So the dot plots, the summary of economic projections suggest another 100 basis points of cuts in total this year. So another 50, so presumably 225 basis point hikes in November, December, and then 100 basis points of cuts next year. The current market pricing is more aggressive than that. It's about 250 basis points in total, or almost 10, 25 basis point cuts between now and the end of next year. So a little bit hawkish relative to that. To me, though, the key thing is that the Fed basically says, we will do what is necessary to support the soft landing. So any signs of economic weakness, the Fed will be aggressive. So, it might be less than market pricing, but they will move and move aggressively if necessary. That's kind of the takeaway from what we interpreted. Our own view is, the Fed will cut 100 basis points this year. So two 25 basis point cuts this year and then 100 next year, basically in line with what the Fed is communicating and a little bit less than what the market is pricing. As a result, this outcome is kind of in line with our expectations kind of going in, and we're really not changing much kind of coming out on the other side. One thing about from the market outlook that is also kind of critical is that, a week ago, we discussed this, that to me, the more important question than whether the Fed was going to cut 25 or 50 was, is the Fed going to be perceived by the markets as ahead of the curve in, doing what it can to sustain or increase the likelihood of the soft landing, turn it into an extended economic expansion? And I'd say last week the Fed did its part by cutting 50 basis points and by the comments from Powell saying they don't want to fall behind the curve. They've done their part in terms of filling that aspect of what investors need to see or to be really comfortable in terms of the macro and the market outlook is the Fed being ahead of the curve. The Fed did its job last week. Now it's up to the data to do its part.
So, Jason, it's interesting. Investors seem to interpret the Fed cutting rates aggressively as increasing the chances of a sustained soft landing. What does the latest economic data say about that possibility?
Well, the Fed was the big story last week for understandable reasons, but there was also other economic data that came out that, in summary, was positive. It sort of reinforced the view in terms of a soft landing. There were August retail sales. There was August industrial production data, housing starts. the weekly initial jobless claims, all that data surprised positively relative to expectations. Based on all that data, the Q3 GDP tracking estimates from a variety of different institutions, and including the Fed itself, are now mostly in the range of about 2.5 to 3%, all very much consistent with kind of a soft landing trend that we thought existed before, and that data just kind of reinforces it. But while the current growth data, you know, remains solid, there are certainly lingering concerns about just how strong the economy is. The Fed Beige Book relies on feedback from all the different regional Feds. Would they then reach out to their business contacts and get kind of color in the sense of like how they see the economy, how they see their businesses? And that commentary definitely is more, you know, cautious, if not outright a little bit, you know, concerning relative to the, you know, the numbers that we're actually getting. So, and then some, that was something that Chair Powell referenced in his press conference at the Beige Book, was suggesting the economy is maybe not quite as strong as what the data points indicate. But for investors, more specifically and more tangibly, what their concerns are is about the labor market, and particularly after 2 week payrolls reports, or certainly below expectation payroll reports for, you know, July and August. There are concerns that the labor market is not just cooling, but it's slowing, and maybe will continue to slow. And despite the Fed's aggressive actions last week, the trend is already in place for further labor market weakness, and that aggressive cuts will come sort of too late for that to be halted. All this is why the September payrolls that's going to be released, you know, on Friday, October 4th, are really a very key, you know, risk event coming up. A strong number, like you add, or, you know, above expectations, something in a range of 175,000, and August numbers being revised higher would go a long way to alleviate these concerns that the labor market is on a, you know, downward trend. It suggests that it's going to moderate, but still very, very solid. On the other hand, another weak, you know, jobs print that is around 100,000 is going to fuel concerns that, yes, the Fed is cutting rates aggressively, but this part of the soft landing for the still being on track, that's definitely going to be kind of, you know, more doubts are going to be raised about that. Because ultimately, if the labor market cools, if people start worrying about their job, they'll spend less. It's going to affect retail sales later on and consumer spending. So, you know, to avoiding that trend is kind of a, you know, a key point. The one other thing I'd mention on just the economic front is the inflation data. The inflation data we got 2 weeks ago was slightly above expectations. And maybe, you know, there's a little bit of complacency on the part of investors that the inflation will go back towards the 2%, you know, level, especially now if you have a Fed that is cutting aggressively, maybe there's a little bit more upside risk. At the end of this week on Friday, we will get August PCE inflation data. Based on what we know from the CPI and the PPI data, you know, you're going to see headline, it's probably in the low twos, it could be 2.2, but there is a risk that it could be as low as 2%. And the core measure that the Fed cares most about could be down to about 2.7% on a year-over-year basis. Now, all this is, again, consistent with inflation coming down. And even on Friday, Fed Governor Chris Waller kind of talked about how they're actually a little bit concerned that if inflation continues to kind of trend low at the recent pace, that there's actually a risk of inflation falling short of the 2% level. It's noteworthy that on the last 4 months, if you take that inflation rate and annualize it for PCE, it is actually running below 2%. So there is a reason to be a little bit not concerned at all, but certainly the inflation concerns, why they're not there, that's why the Fed is also kind of willing to act aggressively, and we'll get some sort of confirmation of that. But I think that would be one area, if there's an upside surprise, it's inflation maybe not being as resolved as the Fed or investors think.
So some notable prints to be mindful of over the next couple of weeks, with PCE due out this Friday, and then, as you mentioned, Jason, the September jobs report coming up next Friday. Now, at this point, the debate is over with respect to the Fed cutting rates by 25 versus 50 basis points. The next big interest rate debate is over the terminal funds rate, or how much the Fed will cut rates this cycle. So why is this debate relevant, and what are your expectations, Jason, for the terminal rate?
You know, whether the Fed ultimately cuts rates down to 3% or 3.5%, or maybe even only goes to 4%, this is unlikely to be the determining factor in whether the economy has a sustained soft landing, extended expansion. You know, I think to get to the nuance of like where is kind of the neutral rate, how restrictive is policy, again, between 3% and 3.5%, it's probably not making, you know, that much of a difference. So this discussion about and debate about the level, to me, it's not so much about the exact level of rates, but it's more about like, what is the economic environment? What is the regime that the U.S. economy, you know, is now in? For example, if the growth rates that we've experienced for the U.S. economy for the past year and trending to, around close to 3% again for the third quarter, if those don't moderate very much, then the Fed may only need to cut to 3.5% or even 4%. So it's a little bit of, kind of recalibration as the Fed used last week, or risk management, taking it down. But similar to what happened in the mid-1990s, the Fed only cut three 25 basis point cuts after raising rates significantly, 300 basis points over the course of the prior year. So there is, that kind of possibility that kind of growth could hold up, quite well. It is noteworthy, or I'd want to remind you and our listeners, that many times on this call, we've talked about the possibility of the U.S. economy being in a roaring 20s macroeconomic regime. And by that, I define as sort of, higher sustained growth, like higher growth of around, 2.5% on a sustained basis, maybe even upside to that. Inflation between 2 and 3%, so not right at the 2% level, but, chopping around in the mid twos level. And this combining into the possibility of elevated rates, where the Fed doesn't cut down to, 3% or lower, but it actually cuts to maybe, 3.5% or even only 4%. To the possibility of what is sort of our view of neutral, I'd say right now, I think kind of 3.25%, 3.5%, that range is, where we would think is sort of what is the terminal rate in this cycle. That would consist of, as a result of the 100 basis point cuts this year and next year, that will get us to that level. Market pricing right now for the terminal rates by the end of next year is less than 3%, is around 2.85, 2.9%, which certainly considerably lower than what we're talking about, and lower than what the Fed is saying, which again is aligned with our view of 3.25 to 3.5%. There is a caveat to that market pricing because it reflects not just the base case, but also a whole range of distributions. So, and if we think of either there's a scenario where the economy soft lands and the Fed cuts to 3.5%, and there's a scenario where we go into recession and the Fed cuts to 1%, if you put on a 75% chance of the former, 25% on a hard landing, then you're going to get out to something that was market pricing in around like the 2.8, 2.9%. So the base case still might be for most investors similar to our view, but the market pricing has to kind of factor into this downside scenario. To me, so the debate about this, where the Fed is going to go, really the more interesting part is kind of what is the U.S. economy going to look like over the next year, as we, kind of enter this, what I'd say is this next and final stage of this post-pandemic normalization. After we had huge economic disruptions, we had high inflation, we had a massive Fed rate hiking cycle. Now that the Fed can cut, it's going to cut back to a terminal level that is its proxy for neutral. What is neutral? What is normal in this post-pandemic environment? I think for a lot of investors who've been so focused on when will the Fed start cutting, by how much, they've spent less time thinking about, what comes next. But now we're kind of at that stage. I think that the possibility certainly of a roaring 20s macro scenario that I described is not being priced in by the rates market or certainly other asset classes. But as we transition from just thinking it's a, will we get a soft landing or not, to like, what does the post-pandemic kind of normal economy look like? This is kind of the key debate that's going to start to emerge. And the terminal rate is kind of a simple proxy for that.
So with that, Chase, and if we turn to economic and investment views following the Fed's announced rate cut last week, the UBS Chief Investment Office did update its house view. What are some takeaways you can share with us from this latest update?
Well, there are no major changes in our house view, kind of messaging, our preferences, even with the Fed news last week and other kind of economic developments. And I think that really reflects the fact that, the macro environment is sort of largely playing out as we expected. We, as I said, assumed 100 basis points of cuts this year from the Fed. That looks, certainly on track. Our expectations for us for a soft landing economy, and the data is consistent, with that. So as a result, we don't necessarily have a significant change in views, because our preference, we're already sort of embedding that particular view. One of the key messages we've had for a while was to, position for lower rates. And now these are our reality with the Fed cutting and cutting more aggressively. In particular for investors who have been, sitting in cash, the prospect of rates going lower more rapidly than perhaps we even assumed as of a few weeks ago, suggests that, it is something where you have to think, now how do you want to be reallocating kind of in your portfolio? Because those money market funds that were offering 5.5%, as of a week ago, by year end, they could be offering, only 4%. So, so something, pretty sizable sort of difference. And that's something you have to kind of be prepared for in terms of the reinvestment risk. But other than that, overall sort of messaging is still, you know, relatively constructive. You know, where are we going to be for the markets year end, but also over the next, you know, kind of, you know, 6 to 12 month horizon.
Now then, Jason, on asset allocation, if we close out on positioning, what should investors be doing at this time?
Well, our preferences imply that investors should by and large be, you know, allocated near their kind of long-term strategic asset allocation benchmark. So we're not making big, you know, tilts and calls one way or another for equities or fixed income. We do have sort of preferences, you know, kind of with them, you know, overall. Now, partly of this view in terms of being relatively kind of balanced, it's reflecting the fact that while we see upside for equities, certainly over the next you know, 6 months, I mean, we have a price target of 6,200 for the S&P by June of next year. So that's, you know, solid, you know, high single digit type of returns over that time horizon. I think part of the outlook, at least more in the near term of when to deploy that capital, is that, you know, I think investors, as I alluded to earlier, they want to be confident that the Fed is actually ahead of the curve and providing effective insurance for a soft landing. You know, by extending the expansion, the Fed's done its part. Now we lean to labor data to sort of do its part. I think there's a little bit of reluctance for investors, understandably so, to kind of chase, you know, the kind of recent performance, given the overall valuation levels, because the forward multiple in the S&P 500 is now over, you know, 21. Yet at the same time, if the data comes in well, the pain trade for a lot of investors is for the markets to go higher. So that's one of the reasons why we think investors should, at least on the equity front, be allocated to, you know, their long-term, you know, kind of positioning. But given some of the uncertainties in the very near term, in addition to the election, which we have not talked about at all, how that could play out, given other geopolitical risks, that, you know, for the moment, we think it's better to sort of, you know, stick more in the kind of the quality tilt towards equities. You're seeing a little bit last week of, you know, cyclicals that start to kind of recover. But until I think we kind of get the all clear from the labor market, you know, you won't get a real strong sustained rotation to cyclicals. I think I'd include small caps in that until we kind of see all the clear. And, you know, it may not just be one labor market report. We might take, you know, further into here before we kind of, you know, get there. We like tech as the most preferred sector. And the data, you know, not much last week, but the week before in terms of overall spending in the tech sector for kind of the AI theme, that still very much is sort of supportive of the view of tech as being a most preferred sector. Within fixed income, one of the general views we have is that we expect the yield curve to steepen, you know, led by both the, you know, the 2-year going lower, but also the back end of the curve, the 10-year going potentially a little bit higher. If the macro environment sort of plays out as we think, there's certainly a good chance that the 10-year drifts higher in between now and year end, you know, touching the 4% kind of level again. You know, at that level, that's a point where we think kind of there's been a dip in, you know, the prices for treasuries. That's an opportunity to add exposure. But sort of know that in the near term, it's more in the middle of the range where we think the 10-year is going to be for the next, you know, say 3 to 6 months, and more likely to probably drift higher, you know, rather, you know, before it goes lower. That will present other opportunities to kind of buy higher quality fixed income and add some duration, but just maybe not at these levels. And the final thing is part of the market reaction to the news of last week of the Fed aggressive actions and further kind of tightens credit spreads, you know, especially kind of the riskier parts of the market. So the risk reward for a lot of corporate credit at this point in time is not necessarily unattractive. It's not negative. The fundamentals should be supportive. But it's not an environment where we think it's a good risk reward to kind of pile into the riskier parts of the credit landscape, given where spreads are and kind of with yields coming lower. I know there'll be sort of a bit of a reach for yield, but be cautious and getting too much out the risk curve in the fixed income space, just given how much is already kind of priced in, which is a lot of good news. And so there's not a lot of kind of cushion of any disappointment on the macro data.
Well, Jason, as always, a productive conversation to begin the trading week. Thank you for spending some time with our listeners and clients, keeping them informed on CIO's latest thinking when it comes to the markets, the economy, and of course, portfolio positioning. So I wish you a nice week ahead, Jason, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation next Monday.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you, Jason. Again, today we have been speaking with Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. I do want to highlight that you, our listeners, can now locate the latest UBS House View Investment Strategy Guide and monthly letter. That title is Get Ready, available now up on UBS.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, please be sure to reach out to your UBS financial advisor to receive direct copies of these resources. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investor investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.